Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 21. "What if it doesn't work?" asked Kyle as he sat on the edge of the bed waiting for Donna to finish brushing her teeth. "Wait a second," said Donna around the toothbrush in her mouth. She turned on the faucet and rinsed off her brush, sipped and spat down the drain. She dried her face and dragged the brush through her hair one more time, looking in the mirror. "What if it doesn't?" responded Donna, walking up to him and hugging his head into her chest. "If it doesn't, then the whole place could go dark. When the batteries and the diesel run out, we'll have to get out of this cave." "I don't know," said Kyle, wrapping his arms around her waist. He had always done well on the test. He was always ready for race day. It was something Dick could always take to the bank. "I have confidence in you. But what if that is the worst thing that can happen? Then deal with it," said Donna. "You want to rub two sticks together to make fire? Really?" said Kyle, unwrapping his arms. Donna let his head go, stepped back, and leaned down to put her nose right against his. "I don't care if we have to eat the dirt and die. I'm happy as long as I'm next to you, my king," she said without blinking. "I never knew what love was until I met you. If it was just you and me, bring on the fig leaves. You know what I'm saying? But we're talking about the President of the United States. Hell, it might as well be the whole world. They're counting on me. There's no plan B, you know?" said Kyle, with his voice weakening. "Let's go get some dinner. We got all ready and everything. We just take it one step at a time, and it's going to be okay. I don't know how I can promise anything, but I promise it's going to be okay. Okay?" asked Donna, putting her hands on either side of Kyle's face and straightening his glasses. "I really am hungry," he said, trying to smile. "There, you see, you're back in the body. Let's get some grits," said Donna. "In our guts. Get grits in our guts," said Kyle, smiling. "Hey, I'm learning," said Donna. The two stood up and made their way to the walkway in front of Building D. They decided to walk, since they had the better part of an hour to get to Building A, just a few hundred yards away. There were people out, in small groups, walking one way or the other. Most were headed for the cafeteria, where nearly 3,000 people ate three meals a day. Scheduled half an hour apart, as the main dining hall could only seat about 1,000 people. The chef's sizable staff delivered meals to nearly every building as well for other meetings, schedules, and security details. The kitchen ran from 5 a.m. until midnight 7 days a week. Then there was another staff that came in and cleaned the dining and kitchen facilities from top to bottom every day for 3 hours. Any outbreak of any illness was a potential pandemic in such a high-priority operation as Site-R. Since 1956, there had not been any sort of illness that exceeded normal statistical levels. One thing nice about a triple HEPA-filtered air supply was the complete lack of people suffering from allergies. It was a very rare thing to hear a sneeze at Site R. "Hey, there's Dick and Katie," said Donna, jumping as they walked hand in hand. "I'll be shit," said Kyle as they picked up the pace to catch up with them. Donna broke loose and ran up to Katie, giving her a gentle hug, scarcely able to contain her excitement. "Oh my God, Katie, it's so good to see you. I missed you. I missed you so much," said Donna, almost crying. "I missed you too. I'm okay. They let me out as long as I take it easy," said Katie. "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump on you," said Donna, smiling. "You're fine. It's just this shoulder that's sore. But I'm getting better every day," said Katie, wrapping an arm around Donna's neck and kissing her on the cheek. "Hey, little brother, you gonna eat?" asked Dick, shaking Kyle's hand with his thumb pointing backward. "Hell yeah, I'm gonna eat. I'm going topside tomorrow, I think," said Kyle. "I know all about it. Lorraine brought us up to speed. She's supposed to have some news at dinner at Bailey's place. You're kind of famous, bro, said Dick, fist-bumping Kyle. You know more than me. Let's grab a seat, said Kyle, pointing to the elevator. The small group walked tightly together and rode the elevator up to the floor with Chef Bailey's kitchen. They walked in together, peeking around the doorway. There they are. I have your seats ready, my friends, said Chef Bailey, putting his chef hat on. Who else is coming? Looks like you have extra tables set up, said Katie. Oh, just the ones who are supposed to be here. I have a feeling my blackened chicken souffle will not be the highlight of the evening. Please have a seat and I will bring coffee. Any decaf? Said the chef as he scanned their faces for a reply. Me, I'm still chilling, said Katie, holding up a finger. Have a chair, baby, said Dick, pulling out a chair for Katie. What time is it? Asked Kyle. It's about a quarter till, said the chef, pointing to the large government clock high on the wall over the doorway. Oh, that is much better than the coffee machine at the hospital, said Dick, sipping at his white porcelain cup. Can we start with dessert? Asked Katie softly. Absolutely, the best way to start any meal. I have a butterfly cake for later, but I have some fresh almond lemon tea cakes if you would like one with your decaf, said the chef. Oh, my God, you are the best. Yes, please, said Katie. You better bring the platter, chef. She'll torture us if you don't, said Dick. Oh, I will not, said Katie, rubbing Dick's shoulder with her hand. Well, there is more where that came from, but you can spoil your appetite, you know, said the chef. Oh, yeah, spoil me some more, said Donna, washing down the tea cake in her mouth with a sip from her black coffee. Well, I thought we would get here early, said Lorraine, as she and Agent Smith entered the kitchen. She hugged Donna and kissed Katie's head and shook Dick and Kyle's hands. I can already tell this is going to be a mess, said Bet, following Smith into the room. Agent Smith, I haven't seen you or Bet in a while, said Dick, shaking his hand and hugging her firmly. Tell me some good news, said Kyle. Were your ears burning? Said Smith. I guess, said Kyle, pushing his glasses back up his nose and smiling. Well, there is good news and bad news as usual, said Smith. He's not kidding either, said Lorraine. Well, the good news is that the President has approved your trip topside tomorrow, and the Marines are going to provide some cover. Bainbury wants this thing to happen, said Smith. And the bad news? Asked Kyle. I'll let Lorraine explain that part, said Smith. Jones has new information that something is happening in Denver. Nobody has ever seen anything like this before, she paused. It's starting, isn't it? Asked Kyle quietly. What's starting? I have a bad feeling about this, said Donna. Jones got a coded ham message from a former colleague in western Kansas, said Lorraine. That's a ways from Denver, said Dick. Well, yeah, it isn't good. He reports three ships taking off in the early evening tonight, said Smith. They were large ships, said Lorraine. Like rockets? How large are we talking? Asked Kyle. Not rockets. They were each about 3 miles long, softly lit, and they were quiet, said Lorraine. You mean UFOs? Asked Katie. I mean UFOs, but they were escorted by fighter jets up to about 30,000 feet, and then they went up very high altitude, said Lorraine. Like how high? Asked Donna. Satellite high. They could be seen for more than half an hour before they went over the horizon, said Smith. Where did they get those? Shit, that means they brought in outsiders, said Dick. They're carriers, and they're not outsiders. Not really, said Kyle. What the hell does that mean? That's not fair, is it? I mean, those assholes can't do that, can they? Asked Katie. There are rules, but they must be using human personnel, said Lorraine. You see, that's the part I don't get. Rules of engagement are a matter of law and authority, but the bad guys never obey the law. That's why we blow the hell out of them, said Smith, breaking out of his agent coolness. Not those kind of rules. Off-worlders are not allowed to attack us directly. They fly around and people snap pictures and take videos, but there has never been a war of the worlds, so to speak. They're not the only ones who have weapons like that. The last thing anyone wants is another war between those forces. That's why they are only present and not involved in our wars, said Lorraine. Okay, that is just bullshit. The government has reverse-engineered their technology and they use it to control the world. It's been like that since the late 1940s, said Katie. Hey, cool your jets there, Wonder Woman. You're going to pop a vessel, said Dick. Well, I'm sorry, but it's true, said Katie, taking a breath and rubbing her shaking hands together. She's right, but there has to be something missing, or they would have used the good shit at some point. I mean, we haven't been without wars since then, and nobody has seen aliens come in and blast the bad guys. To be sure, we aren't even really sure who the bad guys are anymore, said Kyle, holding Donna's hand. Yeah, I mean, that's why it's called a conspiracy theory, said Dick. He's right, Katie. I mean, when have you ever known the military-industrial complex to not use a weapon, if they have it? Asked Donna. 2,600 nukes blasted all over hell and back, and not a single UFO has made so much as a peep, said Dick. Where did you even hear that? Asked Katie, snapping at him. I have this really smart girlfriend who knows about that shit, said Dick, smiling at her. So the folks down at Wars R Us have a new weapon now, and now they're going to use it, said Kyle, spacing out a little. Well, that is another part of the good news. Admiral Dinetti reported that they successfully launched 3 X-37B units loaded with shrapnel from British New Guinea. They call it Operation Gravel Road, said Smith. Oh, shit, they did it? Asked Kyle, scooting his chair closer to the table. What the hell is that? I mean, I truly love the code name, asked Dick. Well, you see, there are 2 planet orbits now. They have to break theirs and make their way to ours. They have to go out and use the moon's gravity to accelerate to about 40,000 miles an hour to break one orbit and join up with the other while going around the dead zone where all the plasma discharges are blazing between worlds. The carriers will assume an orbit about 25,000 miles out to be geosynchronous and then launch the attack vessels from there. That's where things are going to get a little bumpy for them, said Kyle. The fly in the airplane, said Dick. Correctamundo, said Kyle. I'm lost, said Donna. The energy exchange between colliding bodies, say a 747 hitting a fly, is limited to the mass of the smaller body, said Kyle. Like hitting a piece of gravel on the freeway with your windshield, said Dick. Been there, done that, said Bet to a nod from everyone in the room. Yeah, well, try hitting that piece of gravel at 30,000 miles an hour. On an attack run, said Kyle. Holy broken windshield, Batman, said Donna. Shields up, said Dick. Oh, that's the other thing. The Air Force placed 2 Prowler units on the surface of the moon with drones. That gravel is invisible, said Smith. So no shields up, said Dick. At least for the first wave, said Kyle. It still means they have to find another road without a bunch of dump trucks in the way, said Donna. And what if they do? Asked Katie, squeezing Dick's hand. The room was silent for a moment. Chef Bailey stepped up to the table slowly. Miss Shelley has been talking on the air for weeks now. She says not to be afraid. I believe her. I know I've been cooking last meals for quite a while now, and I have to tell you I've never felt so much love in my considerably long life. Let's eat and enjoy the moment, he said, folding his hands together and smiling. "Did I hear someone say eat?" came a deep voice from the doorway. "Rhino! Man, am I glad to see you," said Dick, standing up and grabbing his enormous brown hand with a slap and gripping it. "I brought these other two fine ladies with me," he said, making space for Lisa and Professor Loretta to enter the room. Rhino gripped Dick's hand and pulled him up into him and wrapped his other arm around Dick's back. "It's good to see you, my brother. And Katie, you shine like a Samoan sei flower," he said, touching her hair with his hand. "Lisa, it's good to see you too," said Dick, hugging her. "Oh, Loretta, I've been so busy, I'm sorry I haven't been by," said Bet. "I'm fine, Bet. You're a professor now. You've earned it," said Loretta, hugging Bet. "I'm glad to see you all again," said Lisa, blushing. "You are tall," said Dick, letting her go and noticing she was slightly taller than him, even in sneakers. "Compared to what?" responded Lisa, rubbing her hand on Rhino's shoulder. "Thank you for inviting us, Lorraine. I was afraid we were going to be late. Preparations for tomorrow morning," said Rhino. "You're just in time, but we are waiting for one more," said the chef. "Sorry, guys, I was late getting away from the studio," said Shelley, standing in the doorway next to Agent Jones. "Jones, good man," said Smith, shaking his hand. "I got her here, safe and sound," said Jones, loosening his tie. "Wonderful. Let's all have a seat, and I will bring out the souffle," said Chef Bailey. "You sure this is all? There's an empty place here," said Dick. "That one stays empty," said the chef, looking at Shelley. "No worries, my friends. Actually, you are my family, and nothing makes me happier than cooking for family." With everyone seated, Lorraine pushed her chair back and stood up. She tugged at her short vest and gently pushed her long red curly hair back from her neck and looked around the table. "The president wanted me to invite you all together tonight, and I thought there is no better place than at this perfect table with the most perfect chef. While our dear Chef Bailey is putting out his lovely meal for us, I want to share his thoughts with you, and of course hear yours as well. A rare black moon has risen tonight over the lower earth, marking the dawn of the 5,800th year since Eden fell to this orbit. Rhino and Lisa's model has predicted that the two worlds will separate within a few hours. I believe that prediction to be correct. If ancient records are as accurate, we will soon begin our journey back through the galaxy to our origin. While that all sounds wonderful, we also know that military forces of the Nephilim are on their way. The president has asked Shelley to prepare the people for what is coming. Can you bring us up to date?" asked Lorraine, happy to sit down and cut a small piece of the steaming souffle from the portion on her plate. "Abdullah and I have made every effort we can to reach every living person on this planet with a message that should get us through this, but it's not what you think. The president has been asked not to marshal an army to defend us. The Nephilim has a strategy that has been working for millennia. In the early days of mankind, they inspired men to go to war. For thousands of years, they used religion to make men hate one another and march against one another. They claimed they were commanded by God to commit genocide and to sacrifice their own children. As the Earth matured and the time for the union of the polarity to end became imminent, their strategy had to change. Lucifer harvests the warriors, but he wants to rob God of the victims as well. So the world wars ended, and mankind entered the last century with the idea that the armies of men would have a war that never ended. They managed it like the business of killing and fear and terror. There would never be a victor. all sides would surrender to the state of perpetual war as vital to the economy. Banks couldn't survive without it. Governments couldn't hide trillions in graft and bribes and corruption without it. Now that the two Earths have very nearly come apart, they are coming to attack again. Their purpose is to make us afraid. They want to make us hate, converting people into numbers or statistics. And if they have to, they will send this Earth home without a single living soul upon it, she said to the small group at the table who were no longer eating. But we are not going to let them win, are we, Miss Shelley? Asked the chef, offering to pour more coffee into her cup. No, we are not. Or at least we are going to try not to. You see, there is a method to this madness, and it took me a while to see it as well. I told Abdullah we should stand and fight. You know, freedom isn't free, that kind of stuff. But he said that some of those men up there in those ships can be turned. Even if they die following orders, they too are victims of the evil that has sought to take the seed of Adam by force. And the enmity has stopped them for many centuries. The rhesus factor. Abdullah says that's the enmity that God placed in the blood of Adam. The seed of Lucifer was killed for thousands of years, either in the womb or shortly after birth, by the rhesus antibodies released by the mother into the baby's blood. But the Nephilim figured it out and taught scientists how to vaccinate the Rh-negative mothers against the antibody. Their race has grown exponentially ever since. At first, it was just the royals that had the power and the will of Lucifer in them. They could have one or perhaps two children, and then the babies would die as the Rh-negative blood was attacked by the enmity gene. Now they limit their family size to cut down on the divine inheritance to keep their estates large. They use trusts and foundations to protect their wealth and pass untold wealth along generation after generation until they are unstoppable. It brings us to this point in time. These are the final moments of Earth as we know it, said Shelley as she reluctantly took a sip of her coffee. I have a question, said Donna. You can ask me anything. I have no reason to hold back anything, said Shelley. Oh, yeah, please don't hold back anything, said Dick, chiding Shelley. Are we going to be safe down here? Asked Donna. We don't know anything about the weaponry these attack ships have on them. We do know that our power systems are changing. Everything is running at full capacity, and it shouldn't even be close to that, said Shelley. That's because the electrons are changing, or they're going away or something. I noticed it too. The voltage standards in the lab have been buggy for weeks, said Kyle. What does that mean? Lights out? Asked Dick. Well, lights, yeah. I mean, we don't really know where electrons come from anyway. They're dimensional. But they've been reliable since the days of Tesla. Mathematically, they're predictable. Obey the laws and stuff, but lately their mass has increased. Their speed and photons are changing, rattled Kyle as he turned his cup back and forth on the saucer like he was deciding whether to pick it up with his left hand or his right. What about us? I mean, we have molecules too, asked Dick, tapping his own chest. That too. The biochemistry is changing, said Kyle quietly. So, are we going to be safe down here? Asked Donna again. We know that they know they cannot attack with a landing force. Their weapons won't function, and maybe their bodies won't function either. So they conscribed these ships. They're like ancient ships miles long, and they're going to attack us from space. But there's a good chance their missiles won't work in this plasma environment. I mean, they won't explode, said Shelley. Yeah, but they will be hauling ass when they hit, said Dick. "About Mach 6 I make it," said Kyle, finally taking a bite of his cooling souffle. "So that's a hell of a crash, even if it doesn't explode," said Dick. "The answer is, possibly. We might possibly be somewhat safe down here. If they hit us multiple times, dead on the mountain, then I can't be so sure. But maybe," said Kyle. "Jesus. Won't they just dig deeper and deeper until they get us?" asked Katie. "It doesn't work that way. The point loads are indefinitely deflected by the pieces left from the previous collision," said Kyle. "Oh, yeah, the Sumter effect," said Dick. "The who?" asked Lorraine. "Fort Sumter was bombarded all night by Confederate forces, and not a single Union soldier was injured. The granite blocks just crumbled and made finer and finer gravel that splattered the energy of the mortars into kibbles and bits. Must have been a hell of a party," said Dick. "So we're safe down here," said Donna. "Yeah, but there's no guarantee we could dig our way out," said Kyle. "Oh, we'll get out, if we have to ram our way out," said Dick. "The point is that the entire population doesn't have the protection we have here. They're exposed. They're scared. And we have to keep them from getting angry," said Shelley. "Good luck with that," said Dick. "We've never had a situation like this before. There are no bad guys on this world. All of these people are either the seed of Adam or they've been converted. The bad guys are out there beyond the clouds. We are not sending humans out there to fight them. We might lose those souls to the rage and revenge of battle," said Shelley. "So what? They just look up and smile and die?" asked Dick, and Katie nudged him in the side. "Abdullah explained to me that we do not ever really die," said Shelley. "I heard that somewhere too," said the chef, smiling at Lorraine. "I always wanted to believe," began Lisa as she wrapped her arms around Rhino's bicep, "that we are eternal, you know, that we go on after death to something else. Well, I can tell you we are all very old souls. The skills and power that you bring to this table, you did not learn in one mortal experience. Now it is time for this world to return home, and you have been called here to go with her. No missile is going to change that. Only you can change it," said Lorraine. "So what are we talking about here? How come their shit doesn't work here? What are we going to use for energy?" asked Dick calmly. "Leptons," said Kyle, smiling broadly. "Leaping lizards? What?" asked Donna. "Leptons. Oh, man, it just came to me. They're heavier version of electrons. Not like positrons, but they can work with the protons if they... Oh, wow, I need to get to the lab," said Kyle. "Hold on there, Mr. Rocket Scientist. Breathe. Eat. Stay here with us for a little while longer. Your gizmo will be there in the morning," said Donna, holding onto his arm with her two hands. Yeah, I got it. Besides, this is the best chicken whatever I ever tasted," he said, taking another bite. "All a chef ever wants is a pretty word," said the chef, patting Kyle on the back as he turned to wipe down the counter one more time. "Yes. So, in the morning, we are meeting where to go topside for the great Kramer Energy Show?" asked Dick. "My team will be assembled at 0600 at entrance C. We have a portable canteen set up there, so be on time or you don't eat. We will take the fire roads to the top of the mountain, estimated at 0800. A diesel generator and a security team are ready to deploy at 0400 and give the all-clear go or no-go," said Smith. "We're going, right, baby?" asked Dick to Katie. "Wild horses, driver," said Katie, hugging him. "Are the Humvees still running?" asked Kyle. "You know, that's funny. The diesel won't fire up, so they poured salad oil in the tanks and they purr like kittens," said Jones. "Ha! You see? organic vegetarian trucks, said Donna. We're all gonna die, said Dick, shaking his head in humor. As a matter of useless trivia, Rudolf Diesel did design the first engines to run on vegetable oil. Rockefeller didn't come along for a few more years and converted everything over to petroleum before the war, said Kyle. Yeah, and we've been fighting wars ever since, said Donna. It's those assholes down at Wars R Us, said Katie, chiming in. The group laughed and drew closer to the table to finish the fine meal prepared by Chef Bailey. They knew the truth. Images of people sitting at home doing the same thing around their supper tables faded into their minds. They huddled around their radio, listening to Shelley's words, holding hands, and making sure to take long looks at one another. Every detail of their faces and their hair and the feel of their skin as they touched and loved one another were memorized. They were afraid, without fear. They were hopeless and yet filled with peace. That they were here with this world and these people was part of a pure love that they felt above all else. Soon it might make all the difference in the universe.